Hey, White Sox fans, it is Southside Sox Mothership Podcast number 46. Unfortunately, again, a podcast devoted to a major injury to a White Sox player. These are fun. Maybe we could have one next month too. Okay, let's see. From top to bottom, left to right, I don't know. It's probably going to look different on your screen and certainly in your ears on the podcast. We will start with the entirety of the Indianapolis field office. It's Sergeant at Arms. Sleepy Joe Reeses, he has shown up for the podcast here for tonight, and we are going to try to remove the poison arrow that has been struck right through his heart with this Nick Madrigal injury, because I'm sure he is not happy. The other half of the Indianapolis field office is Crystal O'Keefe, she of the winning streak O'Keefe's, trying to extend that tonight as she is taking time out to do this podcast while covering for Six Pack of Stats. Now that is some kind of multitasking. You may know Crystal from the podcast that is Sweeping the Nation. It is the Estrogen Power Hour. It is breaking all sorts of land speed records. And she's a quarter of that. So how about that? She is slumming it now with the Mothership Podcast to talk Nick Madrigal and the man who's going to give us some answers, maybe, or not, or maybe his charger's going to run out. He's going to run out of charge. He's going to have to take off. That could be cool. I'm sort of hoping he does it. Also from the Eastern time zone, because apparently the White Sox play in the East. Those are the only people who show up for these podcasts. It's Trevor Lyons, straight out of Louisville, settled in there. And right now, again, he's taking time out, pausing from an article that's feverishly going to predict who is going to somehow be able to take over for Nick Madrigal, who's going to be out for at least 2 months, if not the entire year. He's going to provide us perhaps some answers there. Or if he's not, he's going to shrug his shoulders and we all might start weeping. Already, the Indianapolis field office, they're reeling right now with the Nick Madrigal injury. Of course, I'm Brett Ballantini. Seats were hot for this one because the Hippie podcasts are almost done. Only a few days left. I'm going to lose about 5 pounds pretty soon. It's coming. I don't think there's any scalping. Trevor was, I don't think he got any bids. I actually don't think he got any bids. Oh, well, it's all right. There's still going to be a couple more podcasts before this is all done. Nick Madrigal, the news is torn hamstring, running to first base. Sound familiar? He is out at least 60 days, put on the 60-day injured list, which seems extremely dire. And of course it is, but part of that was for practical reason to be able to bring somebody up in Brian Goodwin, who's not on the 40-man. That's sort of a procedural thing. But still, he's not playing for at least 60 days. And it seems like it's up in the air whether or not he's going to miss the season. It really comes down to whether or not they push him to get surgery or if he can rest, relax, think about getting hits with two strikes and come back sometime, let's say mid, probably late August, best case scenario. So let's start with Joe Reeses, Nick Madrigal, super fan. Just in general, guys, the news, you saw this. Did you think it was going to be this bad? Take me back 24 hours and your feeling seeing Nicky get injured.
It's first off, thank you for the kind introduction and the nickname. Totally fair. Moving on. To Madrigal, I'm very sad about that. And I was kind of hoping for the best last night after I saw the injury, but it kind of, like, my mind immediately went to the Luis Robert injury when he was running down to first base. And it was kind of difficult for me to try and stay positive after seeing how Madrigal couldn't stay on his feet after he was thrown out on that close play at first. And it was obviously not a good feeling. And, my initial feeling is that, like, you mentioned that I'm a Madrigal super fan and, some of that is at least like partially from like people, like all of the doubters. And I kind of just really want him to prove a lot of them wrong. Like the Keith Laws of the world, you say he can't do a lot of these different things, doesn't have an elite hit tool, fielding is nothing special. You know, he's been beginning to kind of silence the critics. And these past few weeks, the bat has been on fire. It's just a shame to see him go down like this. And, because he was really starting to show a lot of progress.
Crystal?
Yeah, I'm with Joe a lot on that. I was crushed. It looked really bad when he went down. He couldn't get up. He couldn't put any weight on it. So I just saw this season flash before my eyes, and I was like, well, this just sucks. I'm sick of this. Like, if we could stop killing off all of our players the second they get hot, I would really appreciate that. I mean, Steve Stone made it sound like it was a lot worse at first in the broadcast. He was talking about how it could have been different injuries. And I mean, it looked bad. It looked awful on TV. So, yeah, I'm super bummed. I don't really know where to go from here. I feel like there's not a good equivalent of what Nick Madrigal has done in the last few weeks, even that can match that at bat that we had.
Now, Trevor, your thoughts without getting into what we'll probably do in the second half is talk about what options we have at second base, but what were your reactions to the injury and just learning then today that it was actually as bad or worse than we were hoping?
Yeah, like Crystal was saying, with Steve Stone on the broadcast talking about an Achilles, that had me really, really scared. And I guess it's better than that. But with a hamstring injury, once it came out late last night that it was a hamstring, this is as bad as it can get with a hamstring. Yeah. It's completely torn. So huge bummer there. And if Joe, you know, if you ranked people's outlook on Madrigal from maybe a scale of 1 to 100 and Joe was about a 90, you know, I've always been probably a 30 or a 25, not a total Madrigal hater by any means. But I'm probably one of those guys that Joe's talking about that was getting somewhat proven wrong this year. Don't get me wrong. I thought he had a extremely high floor, but I just didn't necessarily know with the complete lack of power that he had shown up to this point, if the ceiling was there. And the interesting thing is, and I'll expand a little bit more upon it in the piece that I'm coming out with, but with the way that the ball was deadened this year, and offensive statistics have completely cratered, those effects of the ball don't necessarily affect a guy like Nick Madrigal as much. So where everyone else is coming back down to earth, he's a guy that's gonna, power's not a huge part of his game anyway. And he doesn't really strike out. So you can put whatever you want on the ball and he's not gonna swing and miss at it. So his game is actually suited perfectly where the game has gone this year. And it's shown in like his, you know, statistics compared to peers where everyone else is kind of cratered back down to earth. He's pretty much stayed consistent. And on top of that, these last few weeks, he's done something that I've been kind of calling for him to do for a while, which is to maybe sell out a little bit more early in counts and try and hit for a little bit more power, because he does have that outstanding hit tool that he can afford to maybe swing and miss a little bit more earlier in counts and try and go for a little bit more power. And he started to find some gaps and even put a few balls out of the park. So it's tough, him going down right as he's starting to click on all cylinders, especially with how thin the White Sox offense already is. And he was a huge piece of it so far.
Dead ball era superstar, Nick Madrigal. How about we not have anyone for the rest of the season go down like they got shot by a sniper in the stands? Let's hope that can happen. And I think it's come up. It probably even came up on our site, Slack. Could we maybe have a cart for these guys? Do they really have to get dragged off the field by teammates or coaches or trainers? It seems, I mean, I know a cart isn't necessarily a solution, but especially when we hear it's torn, it's like, try to run it off, Nick. And he's like, no, I have one leg left. Guys, can I? Oh, White Sox, God bless you.
Brett, I don't know if it was you that came up with that headline of Nicky Two Strikes now has like one leg or something like that. It was something along those lines, but I got a chuckle out of it.
Then I did my job. Okay. And there's also been a lot of outcry, and I'm not really sure where this falls. So let's take this around the circle here as well about the White Sox suddenly being injury prone. Now let's face it, under Herm Schneider, by and large, the White Sox were very lucky or very good with this. They have traditionally been outstanding with preventing injury. I don't think that's been the case for at least a good five seasons, but they had a big chunk of time where they were great. And maybe we've just gotten fattened off of that where we're like, hey, there should never be injuries. It doesn't strike me that the White Sox are getting hit worse. They're getting hit maybe weirder because, again, that sniper fire for guys running first base, that's not cool. It doesn't look good. But I'm not sure injuries are necessarily worse. I think the White Sox are still actually on the okay side of that. So the outcry, I'm not sure that it bears out, but I'm interested to know what each of you think about that in terms of the White Sox suddenly being injury prone.
I think it may have something to do with a league-wide issue as opposed to a White Sox specific one, at least this year, with the schedule being out of whack from COVID and the very shortened season last year. Maybe that schedule kind of disrupted with players' normal workout cycles, and that maybe is resulting in more of these kinds of injuries. You know, that's at least a theory that I had kind of seen floating around, and it's one that kind of makes it kind of makes more sense to me than like a lot of the other ones I've seen. So I'm not sure if I would blame, you know, the team for putting them in that position, because a lot of teams are having the same issues, but yeah, it's kind of a combination between that and some bad luck, you know, between like Robert and Madrigal, like going down in a very similar way, in, you know, pretty, with like not much time had passed, you know, since Robert's injury even. So in that short of a time period. So it's, you know, probably a combination of a couple of different things. Luck plays a role, but it's not the only thing at play here for sure.
Okay. We seem to have rotated. I'm going to take Crystal to block. Crystal, your thoughts on the White Sox suddenly becoming injury prone, so to speak.
At first I kind of wanted to blame, you know, the conditioning staff, like, what is Alan Thomas doing? Is everything actually okay? But the more I think about it and the more it kind of is almost a league-wide issue, yeah. I really just think it's the shortened season and, you know, missing and bouncing back between spring training, summer training. I think it's just, and I hate to say this because they're professional athletes, they get paid to do this and they have best access to, you know, conditioning, strengthening, like strength coaches, all of that. But I think their bodies just took a hit in that shortened season and that time off. And they're not as, you know, flexible and worked out as they used to be. So I think, I mean, it's clearly a league-wide issue. A lot more players are getting injured this year. And I think we've just had some garbage luck running to first base and they're just slightly out of shape.
If we could just hold a sniper fire, I think it would help a lot. Okay, Trevor, you have dealt with your own injury problems as a player, recently retired from college ball. Now, I know most of yours, I think, were centered around wrist issues, maybe not leg issues, but your thoughts about the White Sox and how they're sort of shaping up with suddenly having these this rash of maybe season-ending injuries, which is sort of the drag part of this.
Yeah, I don't even want to put this out into the world, but I'm going to knock on wood right after. Luckily, the pitching staff, for the most part, has stayed intact. Unlike a lot of the league-wide issue, a lot of the a lot of the other teams are dealing with pitching issues, and the White Sox have stayed healthy when it comes to that. But yeah, it's weird, the soft tissue things that are going on. All three of them have been soft tissue injuries, and I don't necessarily. I think it probably does have a lot to do with what Crystal was talking about, just the fact that it seems to be a league-wide issue, and so I don't necessarily know if it's a White Sox thing, but maybe there is something that they can tweak when it comes to their conditioning program to try and, you know, they do have a lot, not Nick Madrigal necessarily, but Luis Robert, Yoan Moncada always seem to be kind of dealing with soft tissue things, and they're big, big muscle-bound guys, which seems like it could happen to a lot easier. So maybe throwing some more flexibility stuff in there. I don't know. But yeah, like you said, we were spoiled for years and years, and it seems like it's catching up with us and we're kind of hitting the other end of it.
Go figure. Yoan Moncada, the guy who limps sprinting to first, limps getting out of bed, limps going for breakfast cereal, is and had coronavirus last year. Is like, I'm good. I'm having an MVP season.
I will teach a yoga class to all of them to get them. Like, I'm happy to do it. I do it almost every day. So I'll just come in, teach some yoga, get them nice and flexible. They'll be thankful. They will give me a World Series ring. That's what they need. Like, they just need something.
Crystal, they should want you there working just because you haven't lost. Just get you in the park. I like their winning percent. I mean, their home record's already great. It could be better.
Just DM me, White Sox, at White Sox. I'm available for yoga.
Every podcast, Chris, I think we end up getting you hired in a different way. I think maybe, I don't remember what it was before, but it was treats or souvenirs or t-shirts.
Opening glass bottles.
Oh, yes, you were the bottle opener.
It's either I'm getting a job there or I'm dying there. So
that's true. It's one or the other.
I think really committed.
I think it's also funny that folks are pointing out, you know, they're hammering the training staff. It's like, you know, Eloy Jimenez got hurt hanging on a wall going after a ball that was 20 feet over his head. He's been caught in the fishing net 60 different times. He got injured celebrating a no-hitter. I'm not sure there's any amount of training that's going to keep this guy from not killing himself in the field, but probably another podcast. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk about the injury-prone nature of Nick Madrigal, and we're also going to peer into the Magic 8 Ball and see if there are actually any replacements in-house for Nick Madrigal, and we will be taking that down to Louisville to get a little bit of insight there. But we're going to take a real quick break, so please, everybody, just close your eyes, take a deep pause, get into a yoga position. Everybody, downward dog, and we'll be back in just a minute. Hey, that minute went fast. It is Southside Sox podcast number 46. Once again, celebrating a White Sox injury that might be season ending. How about that? But we got to do these emerging podcasts when people get hurt. Pantera went down, and now it's Madrigal going down. Torn hamstring that could take him out for the season. We'll at least have him out a couple months, so probably unlikely to see him back at the major league level before September. Best case scenario, and that's if rest, relaxation, and dreaming of two strike triples will help him recover. Okay, Nick Madrigal, does he still have his rookie status? He keeps getting hurt every year. I don't know if he's accumulating enough games to not be a rookie. He might be a rookie till 2025. Last year, he was out for roughly half the year between the service time gaming early on and then deciding to slide and brace himself and not knowing to slide and take an extra base and being aggressive, busted his shoulder, needed surgery last year off season, this last off season, now something even worse with the hamstring, and certainly much less, I guess, his, you know, fault, if injuries are ever your fault. But is there any concern about the fact that our second baseman in the future can't play a full season? And not answering is not an option.
Yeah, hadn't really thought of this one. I'm not really sure. Like, I hadn't really thought of, like, the long-term, like, is this injury-prone, like, trend that we've seen early on in his career going to continue?
I mean, he battled the wrist thing at Oregon. Or Oregon, yes. Or in college, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wonder what the, like, percentages are on this for, like, players who have sustained, like, similar kinds of injuries in their first couple of seasons, like, how many games they've ended up missing throughout their careers. Like, this is just, yeah, hopefully not. That kind of plants a kind of a new negative idea, but
I don't mean to get down on Nick Madrigal, but again, just juxtaposing with maybe the superhero that is disaster personnel, Yoan Moncada, who had coronavirus and missed, I think, like five games last year. Again, he's constantly wailing and moaning and rolling. He's like the secret LSA Ramirez in the box, rolling around, you know, moaning. And he misses no games. So I'm just throwing it out there, not getting down on Nick. Mm-hmm. Two strikes at all. Mr. Trevor or Crystal, thoughts on the possible injury-prone nature of our young second baseman?
I would say if there's anyone out of our injured guys that I'm kind of worried about, it wouldn't necessarily be Madrigal. I would say Luis Robert, because speed is such a huge part of his game, and the dude tore his hip flexor muscle off the bone. I'm not a doctor, but that doesn't sound great. And you see him putting Instagram stories up left and right of Domino's pizza every night, which when you're in the minor leagues running, working out constantly, that's one thing. But when you're sitting around for 3 months and can't work out and he's starting to get up there in age, uh-oh, not saying that he's old by any means, but you know, there comes a point where you got to take a little bit more care of your diet, especially when speed is such a huge part of your game. I don't want to call him out too much, but come on, Luis.
Trevor Lyons predicting the Domino's baby. Luis
Robert comes back. I'm just a little worried about it. If he loses a step, that's such a huge part of his game that's critical.
No, that's a good point. Because Nicky hasn't proven to we sort of like heard he was going to be able to steal bases. He's a great base runner. He's got a not really nice hit tool. I'm not sure if any of those other things that have been hyped about him have really come to pass yet. And certainly speed isn't necessarily one of them. Although again, torn hamstring, probably not great. Crystal, you worried about the injury prone nature of Nick Madrigal yet?
You know, with Trevor, actually, on that, I'm not as concerned with Nick Madrigal as I am, like, Luis Robert. And, I mean, honestly, maybe, I don't know. If Aloy can stop running into things, I won't be as worried. But, like, the two of them combined, that's just where all of my concern lies. And Trevor had a point. I mean, I've been watching those Instagram stories as well. It is a lot of dominoes and, like, if I eat Domino's, I feel sick for the next like 3 days. So I can't imagine how that's going to affect him in the long run. Like he's going to slow down. He's going to be on par with Yasmani Grandal when it comes to base running. Like it's going to be rough if he keeps this up. And so, yeah, I'm more concerned about him than I will ever be of Nick Madrigal.
Do not want to imagine him being on par with Yasmani. hard to imagine that, but yeah, hopefully doesn't quite get to that level.
On behalf of Southside Sox and SB Nation, I wish to apologize to the Domino's Corporation in case you just did sponsor one of our 30-second spots that we just broke out of because, anyway, apologies, Domino's. Okay, now let's talk about whether or not there are any really, let's face it, Nick Madrigal is 60 days off the team now. And, you know, we all love him. We all have his t-shirt. He's cute. But he's gone now. Okay. He's gone for a while. He's eating Domino's with Luis. In the short term, it looks like the battle is really whether or not you want to run out Danny Mendick or Adam Eaton against I don't think I have it right, but at any rate, Louis, Leury Garcia is going to be playing a definite share of second base. I guess Mendick is going to spell him at this point. I suppose Leury tonight started in right field, so he's maybe going to pretty much play every day between the two spots. And then it's either going to be Mendick or Eaton. That seems to be the little triumvirate going on to take over for the vacuum that is created by Nick being gone for here a couple months. Not to steal Trevor's thunder down in Louisville, there do not seem to be immediate assistance provided within the system, but this might be a good time to sag to Trevor to perhaps give us hope that it will not be such a terrible 60 plus days without Nick Madrigal. Is there any hope, Trevor?
It's tough with the way that the White Sox were constructed last year. They just had all these mashers and you could hide Danny Mendick and Leury Garcia when Nick Madrigal went out for, you know, a few months in that lineup because the rest of the lineup was so stacked. But I'll just run through kind of some of the baseline options real quick. You got Leury Garcia, not going to walk much at all. Solid defender, nothing insanely special, but one of the worst hitters in the major leagues statistically this year. Danny Mendick, who has been about 20% worse than league average hitting-wise throughout his career. Very solid defender. Not as quick of hands as Nick Madrigal on double plays, I noticed, but that's also tough to top. Madrigal has some of the quickest hands I've seen. some other more interesting, well, I guess these are, I'll continue with the less interesting options to me. Down in Charlotte, you have Tim Beckham, Marco Hernandez, both guys with MLB experience. Beckham has been slightly worse than league average through his career at the plate, has some big pop for a second baseman, but has struggled with swing and miss and is a butcher defensively. He's been terrible defensively throughout his career. And then Hernandez is actually performing pretty well in Charlotte right now this year. But in his big league time with the Red Sox has been pretty bad offensively. The most interesting options to me would be you ask Jake Lamb if he can play second base, start having him field some ground balls over there. He's played third base his entire career, but he's been great this year. He's a left-handed bat. Even in his down years over the past 3 years, his actual expected WOBA was pretty comparable to his two solid years with the Diamondbacks, where one of those years he was an all-star. So I think his decline, the more I look into it, has been a little bit over-exaggerated. And with the article that came out on Sox Machine about how he changed his big load to more of a more subtle thing to try and stay in rhythm, he's been ripping the ball. So if we can ride that wave somehow and he can play a little bit of second base, that'd be great. And if he can't play a little bit of second base, I'm asking Yoan Moncada if he would be willing to take some time at second base over these next few months until we can get a long-term replacement on the trade market, like an Adam Frazier or something along those lines. I know he's outstanding defensively at third base, and I took a lot of heat on Twitter for even bringing it up, but I really think that if you make your second base defense slightly worse, your third base defense slightly worse, it's worth it to have not just that black sinkhole in your lineup, especially with how thin the rest of the lineup is starting to get. So Moncada has played second base his entire life. He came up as a second baseman. He can do it. I don't think that he just improved over these last 2 years strictly as a third baseman. I think he improved defensively quite a bit, probably the most at third base, but I don't think his defense at second is going to be as bad as his rookie year defense at second. So even if you're just playing him over there against right-handed pitchers, when you want to get Jake Lamb's bat in the lineup and then you put Mendick or Leary, I would prefer Mendick in against lefties, and shift Moncada over to third for this next month or so until you can find a long-term solution. That would be my go-to. It's bold, but desperate times call for desperate measures.
Trevor, I'm looking forward to reading your article and seeing the fancy graphics, because I was not expecting that the solution for the White Sox at second base was going to be Jake Lamb playing there or Yoan Moncada losing. And I'm with you.
Yeah.
People dogged Moncada at second base. I thought, he was a touch below average. He had a tough season there. Offensively, he had a tough season. He was dragging that out in defense. It would seem to me like he would be average at second no matter what. And again, I don't know if that's going to just spur him to find a way to get hurt. We've been really lucky with dodging a bullet with Yoan, and if he moves a second, is something going to happen? But and definitely not to take any of the air out of your article, but these, I wish there were better options, Trevor. I wish we had a little bit more ready than Hernandez, Tim Beckham, who is a butcher at short. He's not going to play second base. Moving Yoan Moncada across the diamond.
You hate
or
to
Jake
do it,
Lamb. I don't like those four options, Trevor.
I've seen people on Twitter throwing out Jake Berger as well, with either trying to see if Jake Berger can play second or moving Moncada and Stickenberger at third. That's a lot to ask of a guy that hasn't played in the last 3 years. That's a lot to ask, trying to acclimate to MLB pitching when he's just had maybe a month of AAA pitching that he's seen after 3 years off of baseball, as well as learning a new position on the fly. That's a lot to ask.
I'd like to remind everybody listening to the podcast, we are talking about the Chicago White Sox, a Major League Baseball team, discussing these as the options now as they make their pennant push for the final two-thirds of the season. Joe and Crystal, tell me you're more excited about some of what was outlined by Trevor than I am.
I would very much appreciate it if they got Adam Frazier, is my first thought. He's having a great season, and like similar kind of hitter off like as Madrigal is, except, you know, a better version even. Like, he's getting on base 39% of the time so far. 392 on base percentage, has the same amount of homers as Madrigal and fewer at bats. Imagine that. That's amazing. But yeah, hits a ton of singles, he'd be a great asset, playing like prime Nelly Fox so far, and that would be the most exciting option. I guess a little bit more optimistic on Danny Mendick than probably the average person, just because we haven't seen him in the majors that much yet. So I'd be kind of hesitant to take him out of the mix compared to, say, Adam Eaton, where we kind of know more about where he stands.
In so many ways.
right. Like Hamilton, I want to keep him in there. He does have like the major speed asset on his side. Like, Mendick and Eaton don't really have a big specialty like that, but we know more about Eaton to know that he's probably not going to be useful come playoff time. So I'm interested in seeing what Mendick can do, given that he's going to be getting much more playing time now with this injury.
Crystal, are you opting for the Adam Frazier trade option? That does seem to be the most tantalizing of all of these options laid out so far.
Yeah, 100%. I would take him in a heartbeat. Also, in real time, Adam Engel just got a home run as an update. So that's my baby. It's my boy. I just feel like I need to share that with the group. I'm behind going for Frazier. I think that's the best option we have. I have jokingly said, probably on Twitter or in Slack or somewhere, can Jake Berger play any position? I wish, but I'm with Trevor on that's a big ask at the same time. But yeah, if we could get another Adam on the team and maybe just completely get rid of Adam Eaton.
You just want to trade Adams out. I know where you're going with that. You're like, Mac, we hit Max Adams, so sorry.
When's it gotta go?
This contract's gotta go.
I'm for Frazier.
For all of you listening at home, of course, this is running in the morning, and you wouldn't know this, but we're all in the Eastern time zone, so we know what's happening in the game hour ahead of all of you. So right now, back in Chicago, you're all like, geez, I wonder if Adam Eaton's going to hit a homer today. That's a weird pick. Wonder what that's going to happen. Wonder if they're going to win today. Well, we've seen the future, and we know that it looks really good for Crystal O'Keefe to keep her winning streak going. Again, I need Trevor to knock on wood for that one, but It looks pretty good. Yeah, see, Trevor's our designated. We got the Yogan bottle opener, Joe Reese's everyman and Soxman champ, Trevor Lyons, keep everything charged and keep knocking on wood. I think we're winding up because Zoom's starting to bark. But yes, this has been our Nick Madrigal Has Fallen special podcast edition. It's number 46 on the mothership. Thank you for everybody in the Eastern time zone joining me. You Central Slackers, one day will show up. One day I challenge you every podcast and you do not show up. Lame. Thank you, Crystal. Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Trevor. And get well soon, Nick Madrigal.